Good day, world. Welcome to yet another episode of African Football Unfiltered with yours truly, Kamogelo Motsoane. It's a pleasure to have you guys back on the show. Today is the fourth episode of our esteemed podcast. And, you know, on the show, obviously, we have legends of the African game. And today, luckily enough, we're blessed enough to be graced with the presence of yet another African football legend, a South African football legend, to be specific. And his name is Mr. Max Maponyane. Mr. Max Maponyane, how are you doing, sir?
I'm very well, and you, Kamo?
I'm good. Thank you so much for gracing us with your presence today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. But yeah, just to start off the conversation, how's life been? How are you doing? How's everything?
Can't complain. And life is what you make it. And I know that life is simple. We all complicate it. But I try not to complicate it and leave it as it comes.
All right. I'm glad that you're good. You look good.
Thank you.
For your age, my producer made some notes for me here. I didn't know that was your actual age.
What do you mean actual age? You're used to footballers with the different ages.
Yeah. Football age. Okay, if we can just get straight into the discussion, you know, I want to start right from the genesis, you know, of your passion for football.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? What sparked your passion for football, and how did you get into it?
It wasn't even sparked by anything except the fact that it was way of life. I mean, those days we didn't have choices like the youngsters today would have, your cricket, your rugby, and other sporting codes. So I grew up in a township in Middlelands, in Soweto to be precise. And that's where everyone was kicking the ball, you know, a plastic ball. And we would make a ball out of pantyhose and stuffed with papers, make it round enough to kick around. And we would be challenging each other, that is, according to the streets. And that would be the way of life. And I mean, from that age of six until you realize that this is now something interesting. And by the way, I'm giving away my age further. We played during the days when the ball was sore, if you know.
Yeah.
Those balls that would have a sort of string where you use it for pumping, and then they would just tug it in nicely and put the ropes like your shoelaces on top of that. And if you hit that ball with your forehead, you will just stand on the side and just clash you on your forehead. So those were the days, and the boots were obviously the steel ones, but those were for the ones who were working, because we youngsters that could not afford that, we were playing barefoot. And then we thought we have elevated our standards by using crib bandages.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. That's fantastic to hear that, you know, you started from such humble beginnings. You obviously went on to have an illustrious playing career. You know, you played for many, many teams. Can you talk us through that? How was that, like, your football career? What's your view on it, looking back?
It all started at school, because at lower primary school I was already playing, and then higher primary. And in the higher primary, the interesting thing is they were using the stick to measure the heights of the players that would be playing. And nowadays, those things are not there, because now they want their birth certificates and the under-15s and under-19s. But with us, they would just say, no, this stick doesn't allow you to go through, whether you're young or not, but you're tall. you don't qualify. But with me, I was fortunate that even in the A team, I would just walk past that stick. I was never a tall guy anyway. So the beauty of it is I was playing with senior guys, young as I was, at lower primary, then got to high school. And at high school, that's where it got more interesting, because we were at the same school, but also playing together in the same club. So obviously that made us more solid. And we dominated clubs and schools, and not aware that that move was easier for all of us, not all, but majority of us, to make it to professional. Then at high school, that's when six of us turned professional. I was in the same school with Aubrey the Great, Makopela, Metro Blisitole, James Mukonazi, Josh Makubela. And we moved to professional from in the same school, all at the same time, to different teams. What? So it became an interesting high school, where you would find that now, we no more looked at as schoolmates. We looked at Chiefs playing Pirates playing Swallows. So it's like, the stars are right here in the school, you know. Yeah. And it was very interesting.
Mm. Oh, that's fantastic. You speak about you played with Four Chiefs, excuse me. You played for Pirates as well. But luckily, you're one of those players that made that transition or played for both clubs and is adored by both sets of fans, you know. How were you able to navigate that transition and, you know, navigate your way through that dynamic within the fan bases, you know, to be liked by the Pirates faithful and by the Chiefs faithful?
Obviously, that move wasn't easy.
Yeah.
because of the tensions high as they were when I left Chiefs, I had to go to Dynamos for 1 year. Mm. But knowing that I'll end up at Pirates. Because it was obviously cold at Dynamos, cold with respect. You know, because in winter it was literally cold because you would feel that breeze through the stands. Yeah. Because it was always a man and his dog watching us. You know? I just felt this is not on. I mean, you can't come from 60,000-70,000 spectators and then play in a team like this, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then ended up at Pirates and the feeling came back and I just got back into it, and the biggest thing when I said it didn't come easy, it also depends on an individual. Mm. So because the tempers have come down, I also respected the fans of Kaizer Chiefs because I was fortunate that I would score against Chiefs,
really?
But making sure that I don't celebrate so that way. I would know that now I'm wearing black and white. Mm. But it was very interesting there. First day when I was in a Pirates jersey. Imagine having been in Chiefs colors for 10 years. And that first day, I will never forget, we were playing against the Cosmos in the BP Top 8 quarterfinals out in Durban at, that stadium. Yeah. So I'm wearing black and white. For the first 45 minutes, I kept on looking at the colors. And I was like, what are these colors? What am I in?
You know? You almost passed to the opposition.
I almost stopped playing because I couldn't understand. And then second half, I thought, no, man, I must get into this game. You know?
Yeah.
And then I got into this game. We were 1-0 down. And then second half, I scored 2 goals. We led 2-1. And then the late Knicks, Bazuka Sishweni, scored the third, and we won 3-1.
You're very prolific at Kaizer Chiefs. You're the all-time top goal scorer. What made you such a good striker, in your opinion?
I think it's the people around me, because I was playing alongside quality players. I mean, your Waga Waga Likwebe, Shaka Ngobo. I mean, may their souls rest in peace. I mean, these were the guys that would be striking at the keeper and I would be picking up pieces. But also you cannot be blessed enough when teenage Ladla is around you.
Yeah.
You think, wow. I mean, what we have seen Messi doing and teenage doing, some of us would say, we've seen this before live, you know, next to me, you know, and from the stands as a youngster watching him and then joining the team. And you would know, guaranteed, that teenage is going to go past these three guys, whether they stacked like this or they coming individually. And yours is just to be in the right place and finish the ball. So putting that ball in the back of the net was so easy because of the quality of those players.
Oh, really? Okay. People speak very highly of teenage. Exactly.
At some stage, I'll never forget this episode, we were playing Pirates, it took on everyone, and the crowd went, Now, you're in the stadium, and fans don't understand that, you're in the field, and there's tso, tso, tso. Imagine when 60,000 people say that, and it just rings in my ears. And now I ended up admiring him going past all your Easter Komanis and your Khabula Jaws. And I ended up watching him and say, tso, tso, tso. He plays across and he says, Patumele. Go on, Jay. I'm part of this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But that's how privileged we were, you know, to play with guys that for and against were prolific. When I say for and against, I would be laughing at my defenders trying to stop Ace Mnini. I mean, that guy is so talented. Mlungisi Ngubane. Those were the days where you would watch the opposition, even when your team is not playing, just to admire the skills of the likes of Chirwali. Mm. You know, I mean, that guy was something else. Even today, he scored a goal that is still lingering in my memory.
Really?
At Rand Stadium.
Oh, okay.
It was Bloemfontein Celtic against Rangers. And what we used to do those days, it wasn't as easy as youngsters now where you find the repeat on TV 10 times. You know? We would have to go to the game, not told to do that, but out of love of the game.
Mm.
We would go to the game of Rangers and Celtic, as an example, because we're playing Rangers the following week.
Oh, okay.
But I'm there as a striker to observe the weaknesses of the defenders of my next opponents.
Mm.
And that would work. And I'll never forget this one in particular, where I looked at this particular defender, I won't mention his name, and I knew that he likes dumbing left and then pull the ball to the right, and then he plays it with the left. So his left foot was a real, I mean his right foot was a real chocolate. So I watched him, so come the following week, I said, guys, I'm one up. So, what do you mean? No, goal, one goal is
yeah,
in
it's
net,
already, right? You can count.
And on the day, first few minutes, he got the ball with the left. I pretended as if I'm going to the left because he always liked doing that. And then he brought it to the right, and he can't kick with the right foot. And that's when I accelerated. And the guy just missed it completely, and I was left with the keeper.
Wow.
And small things like those, attending to these games and watching, because it's your job. Mm. And those were the things that made a fine difference between you and the other strikers. That is why we never had these moments that we are having. Mm. Your 16 goals, top goal scorer for the last, what, 20 years?
Yeah.
You know, that's very bad.
Yeah, it's a lot.
You know? The brighter side of it is if they can strike competition, then you realize that they can start scoring 20, 25, 30, if you like. You know, you've had your Besumas and your Fanny Madidas scoring the 34s of this world, you know?
Mm. And it wasn't even that long ago.
So that's it shows not long possible. Ago. So it shows that it's doable.
Yeah. Exactly. Wow, that's very interesting. Obviously with your career, you're one of the first players from South Africa to obviously venture into the African space and play on the continent with the club and with Bafana. We know some of the tactics some of these African countries use, you know. Just to put you off your game, we were talking about comfortability earlier on. Mm. I was wondering if you can enlighten us on maybe an instance, like a crazy instance where you went abroad, maybe on the African continent, you were playing a Champions League game or AFCON qualifier, whatever the case may be, and, you know, they tried maybe something unsavory.
No, there's so many. In fact, the interesting thing I have to say and thank God for is I'm so privileged because one has been, you can imagine, from 1981, one has been subjected to playing against the same peers over the years, and you can't grow because you can't play with anybody because of the sanctions.
Mm.
And it just became interesting when we ventured into the continent.
Mm.
Where we had the quarterfinals. Remember, we're playing it for the first time.
Mm.
And my message to the viewers is that in life, never say it's for the first time.
Mm.
You can crack it if you want it badly.
Yeah.
So we played the Champions League for the first time as Pirates.
Mm.
But we had quality players.
Mm.
And we thought, we're going for this.
Yeah.
And then came to the final. But when we got to the quarterfinals, that's when you now pitted against the guys who've been there, done that, failed to do it over the years. And it was for the first time now a team from South Africa playing in such a competition. It was hectic.
Wow.
We got to the semifinals. We played out in Uganda.
Mm.
And there, they organized the guys with the trumpets and the drums, but they were seated right behind our bench. So every time our coach stood up to shout instructions, they would beat the drums and blow the drums. So the coach would just be screaming and nobody would hear it. So it was all the tactics.
Mm.
But even the night before, they organized the live band at that hotel where we were staying.
Mm.
And they gave us a wing where the garden area is the side. So it was festival in the garden kind of a thing. So the whole night it was just that reverberation on our pillows, and we never slept well, but they knew that they had a further plan when we got to the stadium. And those are some of the things that one can tell.
Jeez.
But it hasn't ended.
It's still happening
even today. I mean, you saw Bafana last week against Nigeria.
Mm, mm.
I mean, all the struggles.
Mm.
So, It's very sad sometimes also when I look at what is happening, and I was asking a question to my colleagues last time. Why is Madagascar playing Comoros in South Africa? Mm. Why is Lesotho playing Rwanda in South Africa? Yeah. Namibia playing in South Africa? Mm. I mean, what does that mean to the passion and closeness to their fans? I mean, when they see the big crowds after they had qualified for the World Cup, wherever they are, they will be shocked, and that's how they won't even continue to the next step. Thanks to our Bloemfontein supporters, who are their numbers, can play in South Africa and away.
Yeah.
But away, obviously, is not for us, but at home, that's the intimidation that the Bloemfontein has brought.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
That gave us a good start. And we're there. We might end up in the three venues of the World Cup.
Yeah, hopefully. Mm. You speak about the teams that aren't allowed to play in the home countries, Lesotho, Zimbabwe, one of them, they're in our group, so maybe it can work out. Bafana, you segue nicely into my next question, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know, Hugo Bruce has been very vocal about, you know, if South Africa want to win, then we're going to have to kind of neglect this thought that we have to play the South African way, if I can say. You know, a lot of fans, they clamor for to have, if I can use a Kasi flavor as a as a lack of a better term, you know. You obviously spoke about how you grew up playing Kostrateng, you know what I mean, in the streets, and how true is his sentiment, and do you believe that we're gonna have to kind of move away from wanting to play this kind of Kasi football and kind of move in a more pragmatic approach whereby we do win more games in a less South African fashion?
I think the answer has always been be more pragmatic, be more sort of results orientated, be more of a team member. And I've never been a fan, and I've always been accused of not understanding the Kasi thing.
Mm.
I've never been a fan of that, because even when I was playing, when those party starts at the corner, teenage and doctor, I would be not part of that party. I would always know that I'm not invited. I just want this ball in the back
the
of the net.
Yeah.
So that is why the nickname Gomen Go.
Oh, Gomen Go.
Because the fans realized when all these guys are partying, I'm now go to the net. And that's because I couldn't do those things. Mm. But it's not about me. It's about the reality. The reality of life is the fact that the game has evolved, and you do still have players that would eliminate one or two unbelievable skills, your Messi's of this world, your Ronaldo with a step over. And we had the likes of Teenage and the likes of Ace Mnini. Mm. They would do that going forward. Mm. I don't mind that. You can eliminate 3-4 players or defenders going forward and looking for a gap. Don't look for three. Look for a gap. If you've done with one, you can play your teammate and then get into the gap and let that end up in the back of the net. If it doesn't, but force a save from the keeper.
Mm.
Those are the basics. But don't be on the... I mean, some of the things that I would be seeing in the townships, I mean, the guys are putting both knees on the ball, and then they would go around the ball. And I'm thinking, this thing is round already. Are you trying to perfect it, you know? I mean, it is SABS approved. Why are you going around this thing? Because now the defenders are closing the holes.
Yes.
Because the purpose of this game is to find the gaps, the pockets behind the defenders.
Mm.
And let it be flowing. Mm. We will admire your skill, even if it's one of those skills that Ace Mnini used to do. He would face an opponent, and as he gets to an opponent, he'd just bedevil him by just flipping this thing like that, just like Neymar would do.
Yes.
Just flip it, and I saw it in South Africa before your Neymar's of this world. Ace Mnini would flip it, and the defender doesn't know what happened to the ball, and then he's now running alone and playing that cross to Congo Malebani to put the ball in the back of the net. Mm. And we used to these things. Do it like that for a purpose.
Mm. Okay, yeah, that's fair enough, you know, that's a fair enough. Because, yeah, a lot of South African fans, they've been clamoring for that type of football. But it has to be progressive, as you
said. It's got to be progressive. I mean, you remember that game that is most notorious, maybe others would say famous, where the team was leading 3 or 4 nil, and then they decided they're all going to sleep on the ground and allow the opponents to score. It's discussive flavor. Then I have to now switch to a movie, maybe, to watch something different. Because it was during off days, so there was no other football on TV. But now let me watch a movie.
Yeah.
Sorry, because that didn't move me.
Yeah, exactly.
The movie would be better.
Exactly. just still sticking on the subject of Bafana. Hugo Bruce has been in charge of Bafana for like 3 years now. You know, some people, he's a polarizing figure, you know. Some people like him, some people don't in South Africa. What's your assessment of him and how he's done with the national team so far?
I'm for his opinions, and you know, he has also made statements where he had to apologize.
Yeah.
But he apologized for peace sake.
Yeah.
But I would agree with him.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, to say it's not good enough. Mm. This material is not good enough. Mm. I mean, the man was honest. Mm. And they attacked him by saying, but how do you criticize people that are putting food on your table? Mm. But now that you're putting food on my table, you are my boss, I can't tell you that, boss, it's not good enough. Mm. It's not fair. Mm. Then you might as well leave because you don't have a say. So at the time, he was right. Not until the AFCON that we came of age and we got recognized, we finished that and we took it from there, meaning we just started progressing and looking better. Mm. Now, today, I can suddenly be proud of Bafana Bafana. I was surprised when I was in that game, working in that game. Mm. I could even foresee and foretell the squad. You remember we never even used to do that since 1996.
Yeah.
Because we would think, who are these guys? Who's playing today? Yeah. But with these ones, we're starting to get into the groove now. You know that you've got those guys that are or were predominant at AFCON, and then these other ones that makes the difference. Your Sithole, your Apolis, your Reyners. Yes. But you now have getting to get the picture of this Bafana Bafana team. Forget the names, the approach. They are playing much better now. They're more composed. They can switch on to the next gear. Mm. The bench is even healthy. Mm. You know, when the worst thing for any team is when you struggle and you look at the bench and you think, guys, I can't even ask you to warm up because you are cold even when you're home. You know? You won't make a difference.
Yeah.
You know? So that is why other coaches say, I'd rather play with 10 than 11.
Yeah.
Because these guys on the bench, nah, they're not worth it.
Mm.
So that's the situation with Bafana now. Very impressive. Mm. Hoping that they get us to the 2026 World Cup.
Yeah.
They look like they can, especially because the most and admired and talked about team, Nigeria, is struggling.
Yeah.
And to see Nigeria second bottom on the log, it's surprising,
yeah,
very surprising, with all those big names playing all over the world. Mm-hmm. And this confirms the fact that in life, when you want it badly, you can get it, you know, because it's not the name that matters. It's the hunger that brings food on the table, you know. Yeah. So that's what Bafana Bafana is today. We can be proud of it.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, we've come a long way with Hugo Bruce. Yeah.
In fact, I was also happy to hear that he's staying.
Yes.
Remember, there was rumors after AFCON.
Yes.
It just shows that his stay could lead us to the World Cup.
Yes. Yeah, there were rumors of Tunisia, probably poaching him or whatever, but... Yeah, also he was vocal about, you know, things that needed to improve. You know, he wasn't just going to stay.
Yes.
You know, he needed things to change as well.
And it looked like they attended to that.
Yes, exactly.
And he's happy. Yeah. He was praising the Bloemfontein supporters and he says, bring more games here.
Yeah.
And that is the man that is now committed.
Exactly.
We still have to play Lesotho. Imagine playing them in Bloemfontein.
Yes.
And then we have, by the way, Lesotho is just across the border.
So
the stadium will be packed. There won't be room for players.
Yeah.
I mean, for fans. When last did you hear that the stadium is sold out for Bafana Bafana?
Yeah, it's been a very
That would
long time.
Be the day.
Yeah, that would be the day.
And then if we play these other teams, Rwanda in Bloemfontein, that would work for us.
Definitely.
If it can help us, let's not try to go everywhere.
Everywhere.
We need to qualify for the World Cup.
Yes.
And we're very close. I mean, all three of us now with seven points on top, all waiting for March. I don't know why it takes so long. I mean, to an extent that even when we got back into the groove now, I had already forgotten or had the picture of that Rwanda Bafana game, you know?
So long ago.
3 years to play, to qualify for the World Cup.
Fantastic stuff. Yeah, I speak about the game in Bloemfontein yesterday. Obviously, we won. But what was nice to see also was, Ronan Williams advocating for young Relebogile Mofokeng to come on and get his first cap for Bafana. You are a young player. You came to a big club as a young player and made an instant impact, so to speak. What is your assessment of him, and how far do you think a young player like him can go?
A young player like him can always obviously end up in dizzy heights, and fortunately, I watch football. Yeah. I don't watch South African football. I watch football all over the world. Yeah. And I've seen your Lamar, and for Spain. He's still holding the record of being the youngest player at 16 scoring in an international match on debut. Mm. So these are the youngsters that's been introduced. Pedri, Gavi, you know, all these youngsters have been introduced all over the world. I mean, you know the youngster who's playing for Norway and also playing for Man City also.
Mm. Oscar Bob.
So these are the youngsters at 18 who are being thrown into the thick of things, and that can only grow you. Some of us have been thrown into the thick of things at the age of 18, and then from the bench, obviously, in a winning team.
Yes, because
that is one point that I have to emphasize. Yes, the youngster is talented. When do you play him? You play him when the team is winning. Don't kill his confidence and play him when you expect results through him. You know, let him enjoy, get into the groove, and then he can be the star that you have seen in him. But once you expect results from the star youngsters, you'll end up in a situation where Kaizer Chiefs is now. Because a lot of youngsters with a lot of potential have come in, but they have also been categorized as the failures. You know, the team that never wins any trophy. And this kills the confidence of the poor youngsters. Some of us, when you got to Chiefs, we are coming from the bench when it's 2-0, 3-0. In the cup final, you come on and you're leading 2-0, you score the third. That confidence comes in because it is very, very nerve-wracking. You really have butterflies to play in the cup final. And nobody can tell me that doesn't happen. Until you've played a lot of cup finals, then you start dominating them. Often people say, wow, Real Madrid is made for these finals. No, they're not made. They've been there before. So they're more comfortable than the opponents. You can imagine what was going through Dortmund, the players' minds. That is why they were missing chances so early, when they could have been three up before Real Madrid scored. But it's because you've been there. So you are more calm. You know what to expect. The atmosphere is not new to you. And that's how we were brought into this game, by saying, go there, we're leading, just emphasize on our mission and vision. And the vision is to always make sure that you win a trophy every time when you are in it. And remember, there was a time when Barcelona says, we don't play any competition without aiming to win it. And that's how it should be in the game. But you can think that way when you have players that can do that. And they had your Javis, they had your Messi's and Iniesta. What a team that was. So you've got to build such a team, but you build it and always bring youngsters in the background to carry that flag.
Very true. Nice. Just touching on the, going back to the Champions League kind of aspect and African aspect of it. You know, there was a sentiment rather during the last Champions League, the only two teams that had, North African teams that had qualified to the knockout phases were Al Ahly and Esperance, and there was talk like North African football is declining, you know, there's these talks, is Southern African football coming up, East African football, is it coming up? But then these are the only two teams that made it to the final, you know. So what is it about these North African teams that they are able to perform so well in the Champions League stage?
It's about them playing simple, straightforward game, if you've noticed.
Yes.
They are closer to Europe, their borders, and most of their players are always going across the border, and they play the style that is next to their neighboring borders. And they keep it straight and simple. When we always find that we struggle a bit, if you must have noticed that Senegal started dominating when they were getting straight to the point, you know, because then they would have players that are always going straight there into the box, simple crosses and making the game look easy, because that's how it should be played. Mm-hmm. So what makes them being dominant for so long? You know that Egypt also have won AFCON, so umpteenth time.
Yeah.
You know? And then you've got your Al Ahly and your Zamalek and all that. So those are the teams that are dominating because of the other factor that we haven't looked at. Because they have the money, because they can buy quality players. Even now, I've realized they ventured into the SADC because they've got players from Botswana, got players from Zambia and
South
all
Africa,
that. So South Africa. So it shows that if you've got the money and you've got the direction, you can always dominate. We know from here at home, simple example as Sundowns. You've got the money, you've got the plan, you can dominate because you don't even struggle to be what you want to be. If you say, I want to be the best team because I need to have the best this, the best that, that can look after this department, you can afford it. Yeah. So let it be. Yeah. And that's the planning. Planning goes with money.
Yeah. But Sundowns have money. It's debatable that they have money, just like Zamalek or Ali. But unlike them, they are not able to, I don't know, make it to that final stage of the final of the Champions League or able to win it, you know?
Yeah, but also it goes with time. I mean, the more they get into those quarterfinals, semifinals. I mean, they've been so unlucky 2 years in a row, semifinal stage.
Yeah.
So when you get more into that, it's just a matter of time to crack it and put the second star, because it's unlike lacking all the time. They've always even been dominating their group, you know? And that's where it's where people don't realize that it's where experience is gained from. You can't gain experience from watching.
Yeah.
You can't say this guy has been on the bench in the last 10 years, so let him start because he's experienced. He's not experienced. I mean, you look at the, you can recall the Zimbabwean goalkeeper yesterday. That man was there for the first time. And I thought, guys, we can't lose to this people. So you can't gain experience from sitting on the bench, even if you can be with the team for so many years.
Yeah.
You need to be involved. Yeah. You need to become better by facing the challenges, but not from from the sidelines. So that's exactly what the challenge is with Sundowns now. They are there in the thick of things, and trust me, they will buy one or two players knowing Sundowns, and they will end up in the final very soon.
Okay. Nah, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. And then, yeah, just my final question. I grew up knowing you as somebody that was an analyst, you know what I'm saying? And then when I speak to my father, he's like, no, this was a serious, serious player, you know what I mean? So I've always been fascinated, you know. I always look up to you as an analyst and somebody that knows the game. But having been a footballer, top footballer as well, what was the perspective that, you know, you didn't have as a person, as a footballer going into media, that you didn't have as a player? And how did that perception change of football? Like, how did your perception of football basically change going into the media space versus when you were a footballer?
It became an easy transition. It's easy transition in the sense that I would be in the thick of things. And some basics won't change. I mean, this is one thing that people don't realize. Sometimes in this game, you have to say, if all else fails, like any other thing in life, if all else fails, go back to the basics. You know, because you're trying too much and you are forgetting the basics. For instance, if the ball comes to you and the teammate is making a run, you flip it and you turn. You haven't even seen where the ball goes to. You might even miss it when you flip it. But why don't you just follow the basics, stop this thing, look up and play into the gap, turn, and your teammate gets to the ball and you are at the end of the cross. But youngsters today, and a lot of footballers too, are just messing up the simple game by complicating it and trying things that are not there in the book. Yes, there are things that you cannot be coached for, like what I was known for, bicycle kicks. No coach would just go to your training and throw balls. And otherwise, you'll break your neck and your back. So the most important thing is, having been there, you know things that did not work. You know things that worked. And when you go on television, you're now speaking about things that you have experienced, the dangers that you have seen, the moments that I've never even shared with any viewer, where you know when to get your foot stuck in. Yeah. Remember, it's a contact sport. Yeah. But not every contact must be made. Because sometimes you feel, I'm going to be a fraction late. Let me jump here. You know, those are the small things that you can't coach anybody. That's why you find that there are those who break legs and there are those that are fortunate. But you get fortunate and be unfortunate by being in the thick of things, as I said earlier on. You gain that experience. And when you are now on screen, you share these things with the viewers. And I'll take a quick typical example. Yesterday, there was a moment where Reyners had one option, got a ball, and his option was to curl the ball to the top corner, and the keeper saved. Yeah. But you look at the near post, there was no way that as that ball was coming from his left, was going to now swing the body and place it on the near post, because the keeper was between the near post and the middle. Mm-hmm. So that area was closed. So he made a good option of seeing those things. Mm-hmm. And now you say these things because you've been there. Mm-hmm. You've been in that situation as a striker, where you say, I'm going to play there. But other instances are uncoachable, where it's more spontaneity, where you just say, I'm in this situation. I mean, I've been in situations where I'm going for the ball, and my teammate flicks it, not aware that I'm behind him. And suddenly I would turn and then hook it, the bicycle kick. You can't tell me I woke up and say, when I flick it, and then I will do that. Yeah, it's just improvisation. And fortunately, with God's grace, where one would even be having the ability to maneuver mid-air. You know, because very few players can maneuver mid-air. I mean, I know players like your Roberto Carlos and your Nick Sigwani. Yeah. The only players that I know in the world that would jump twice, meaning jumping while he's jumping. Yeah. He's up and then he goes further up. How do you do that? You know, but it's all a question of fitness. Yeah. I mean, if you look at their hamstrings, it's like a bag. You know? Those are the things that enables you to do that. Basically, when I say that is, if you want to be the best, you've got to work hard. Mm. You've got to train. Go an extra mile, you know? Maybe your dad wasn't lying when he said, I happen to be in that box all the time. And the answer was very simple. I would train privately, not only with the team, but also I would not train the same thing that we do at training. I would jump hurdles. You know, when you're a striker, it's very important to always be jumping tackles. So it's a 60-meter race, full speed, and then jump the hurdles. Because when you jump these hurdles, at the end, there are balls. So as you land, you finish. Mm. So you think that way, because you imagine these hurdles being opponents. Mm. And the way you train has to befit the position you are at in the field. And that's how one would become a better player. Mm. But you've got to have the hunger. You've got to want to be the best. And these players can also see that the 41-year-old Ronaldo, by the way, not even 40, he's still training hard. I've been seeing him working out, and his son is following on his footsteps. So to be the best and to be there with everyone, you've got to work hard. Put an extra time to your work.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Wow. That's all. Thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it. I feel honored to be in your presence and to speak to you and to pick your brain about football. So thank you so much for your time today, Mr. Mabonyana.
Thanks very much for inviting me.
I hope you enjoyed it as well.
I had fun. Thank you. Especially when you talk about this beautiful game.
Yes.
And this is one game that I can talk about the whole day and night.
Now we'll make sure to bring you back, of course.
Thank you.
To our viewers and to our listeners, thank you guys so much for tuning in. If you have not already subscribed to the podcast, please do that. Follow SNL24 on all the socials so you can be updated with everything that we're putting out. Until we bring you episode 5, thank you again for tuning in. It's been a pleasure. Kamukhwelo, yours truly signing out. Bye.